The topic for today's episode is significant influence. In the accounting world, when you make an investment in another company, for example, by buying stock, you have to determine the degree of influence that comes with that investment. Basically, are there any strings attached? And that degree of influence can be categorized in one of three ways. One, you could have control over the other company. Two, you could have significant influence. Or three, you're basically just a passive investor. And that's important because the way in which you account for your investment depends on which degree of influence you have. The problem is GAAP doesn't clearly define what significant influence means. And there's often a lot of judgment that goes into deciding whether you have it or not. You know, if I were to put together my Mount Rushmore of ambiguously defined accounting terms, significant influence is definitely on it, right up there with reasonably estimable, materiality, and of course, probable. So in thinking of the analogy to help explain what it means, I naturally thought of my biggest investment, but it's not any stock that I own or my car or my house. It's my two kids who are 4 and 7 years old. And when I think about my level of influence over them, one thing is very clear. I do not have control, which is what I try to explain to people in public when they tell me, get control over your kids. But even though I don't have control, I'm definitely much more than a passive investor. It puts me into that significant influence category. And it makes sense if you think about it. They depend on me and my wife, obviously, to teach them things, to navigate the streaming services, to find their favorite shows, and of course, money, in this case, for the neighborhood ice cream truck. And that dependency gives us the ability to influence them to do things like their chores or homework or eat their dinner. But don't get me started on our dinner battles. But as our kids get older, our level of influence as parents is going to change. One thing I don't think is ever going to change, though, is them asking us for money. I remember my dad used to say, I can't wait till you guys are, quote, off the payroll. So in this episode, we're going to explain how this parental dynamic is actually very similar to an investor who has significant influence. But what's different about kids as compared to the accounting standard is they can also have significant influence over you. You know, my kids are obsessed with rock and roll and AC/DC in particular. And that's a story for a different day. But because of them, I too fell in love with AC/DC. And this ultimately culminated in a family vacation to Amsterdam just a few months ago where we saw them perform live. It's actually my kids' first concert. And it was one of those family memories that I just know we're all going to have for the rest of our lives. But enough with the sentimental stuff. We've got some accounting to discuss. So let's rock and roll. Joining me on today's episode is Molly Chilakapati. Molly is a partner in our national office and is the topic team leader for Consolidations and Equity Method. And while those credentials are obviously very impressive, what truly makes Molly an expert on the subject is that she's the mom to several teenagers. And so in our conversation, Molly and I are going to explain significant influence basically by sharing some life stories. So we hope you enjoy it. I'm Nick Tricarci, and this is By Analogy. Molly Chilakapati, welcome to the show.
Nick, thanks for having me. It's my first ever podcast. I'm excited.
Yeah, I'm excited to have you. You know, Molly, in the cold open, I told the story about how my kids are obsessed with AC/DC and how they basically converted me now into a huge rock and roll fan. And I know you recently saw Guns N' Roses perform. Is that right?
Yes, that's true. I've seen them 3 times. Although, Nick, I can't blame my kids. I'm going to blame the significant influence of my significant other. Just stay on theme here. It was his fault.
Well, you know, I would love to talk about rock and roll for the next 30 minutes, but we did promise the people an accounting discussion. So I wanted to get into our topic today, which is all about significant influence and what does that actually mean? And the reason why we're talking about it is because, you know, if one company has significant influence over another company, then they have to account for their investment under the equity method of accounting, which comes with its own unique set of rules. I don't want to get into the gory details of exactly how the equity method works, but I thought, just to set the stage, you know, people often refer to the equity method as a, quote, one-line consolidation. And I was hoping you could just explain for us what we mean by that.
That's a good place to start, because I think with the equity method, it is easy to get lost in all the mechanics of the accounting. So starting with the one-line consolidation premise, what you're accounting for is your percentage ownership in every single line item on that investee's balance sheet and P&L. Like if you've ever seen proportionate consolidation applied, you actually have a percentage of all of the PP&E, all of the intangible assets, each and every liability. So for the equity method, it's the same, but it's all collapsed into a single line item. That's the concept. Does that help?
Yeah. I mean, you know, to the one line consolidation point, I like to think of this as like a gross net concept. You know, if you consolidate the investee, you're grossing up your balance sheet and income statement to show, like you said, all the individual assets and liabilities, the revenue, the cost, et cetera. Whereas if you're on the equity method, all of that's getting netted down into a single asset on the balance sheet and a single line item on the income statement. So I think that helps just set the stage for, you know, what we're talking about when it comes to the equity method. So, all right, let's pivot to significant influence, because this is really the gating question of whether you apply equity method or not. And, you know, Molly, the accounting guidance says there's a rebuttable presumption, and everybody loves a good rebuttable presumption in the accounting guidance, that significant influence exists in certain situations. Can you tell us what those are?
You're right. If you have significant influence, you are in the door to the equity method of accounting. So when you look at what your underlying investment is in, if it's in a corporation, the rebuttable presumption is that if you have an interest in 20% or more of the voting stock, that you have significant influence. So at 20%, you apply the equity method. And the inverse is also true. If you have less than 20%, then it's presumed that you don't have the ability to exercise significant influence, and so you don't apply the equity method. For partnerships, it's a bit different. If you have an interest in a general partnership, any non-controlling interest in that general partnership is going to get you into the equity method of accounting. Significant influence is presumed. If your holding is in the limited partnership, so you have limited partner units, if you will, you're going to apply the equity method unless your interest is so minor that you have virtually no influence. That's what the standard says. And then the general view on that is that if you have a holding of 3 to 5% or more, you're generally going to apply the equity method if that interest is in a limited partnership.
Okay, so step one is figure out what you're invested in. That is then going to determine what rebuttable presumption you are, you know, applying in the literature. Which I think is funny because, you know, the analogy for this is that significant influence is like raising your kids. And I think there's a rebuttable presumption out there that parents have significant influence over their kids. Although I think that presumption is that we have control. But I mean, you and I both know that that's a complete pipe dream. But the other thing about rebuttable presumptions is that they can be overcome. And, you know, in practice, I think we tend to get a lot of questions when someone's invested in a corporation and they own less than 20%, that threshold that you talked about. But there's other, you know, qualitative indicators suggesting that they have significant influence. So what I want to do for the rest of the conversation is really talk about that dynamic and dive into each of these qualitative indicators that are mentioned in the accounting guidance. And then I'm going to try to work them into this overall analogy of raising my kids. So with that, Molly, what's the first qualitative indicator that suggests someone has significant influence, even if they own less than 20%?
It's the first indicator, but of course, you have to take the entirety of the facts and circumstances and evaluate them in combination. So in no particular order, let's talk first about representation on the board of directors. This is usually the one that jumps out at people when they're trying to figure out whether they have significant influence or not. Representation on the board brings with it voting rights or perhaps veto rights over certain management decisions. And even though that director might not control that decision at the board level, like they don't have a majority vote, the fact is, because he or she can vote, it may be an indicator of influence over the operating and financial policies of the company. So you do have to kind of look at that and take it into consideration.
And that makes sense. I mean, if I think about my kids who, you know, they're 4 and 7. You know, if I were to figure out who's on their board of directors, you know, obviously my wife and I would have a spot, probably their teachers. And at this point in their lives, I would say their grandparents as well. You know, that's the group that's going to provide them with guidance, you know, try to keep them out of trouble and overall just try to make sure they grow up to be good people, which is not too dissimilar from what a board does over a company, right? And, you know, my wife, as the chairman of that board, obviously has significant representation over my kids, which is why I'm, you know, going with this analogy that we have significant influence over our children. You know, one question I used to get on this a lot when I was at the SEC was, you know, whether board representation is all created equal. And what I mean by that is, let's say there's 10 members of the board of directors and I have one seat, you know, I have one member on that board. Is that the same as if I had, you know, 4 out of the 10 seats?
So that's a good question. And you're right. We do get this question a lot. And I would say the answer is not necessarily. If you've got a board seat, you're going to take a longer look and really do a full assessment. But what you might find is that if you've got one board seat and that's in line with your investment, let's say you have a 10% investment. I think you said there were 10 board seats, right? So let's say you've got a 10% investment, you've got one board seat. That might look and feel a bit different than, say, if you've got four. That four board seats that you might hold might be indicative of some significant influence as compared to if you only had one. There's some reason out there why you have three more board seats than your percentage interest. And so that might be an indicator of significant influence.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think the takeaway is if you have any representation on the board of an equity method investee, or I should say an investee, you've got to take a hard look at whether that gives you significant influence. And then the more board seats that you have, the more likely it is that you're going to conclude there's significant influence. Okay, so let's move on to the next one, Molly. What's the next qualitative indicator in the guidance?
The next indicator is participation in policymaking decisions, because that starts to seem close to participating in management. So maybe the investor has specific approval requirements for operating decisions around policies or budgets or management selection and compensation. All those rights give the investor influence over management and therefore potentially influence over the investee.
I'm trying to think right now of my what I would say my kids' policy making decisions are, and it's a scary thought. But the thing that's coming to mind is snack time. I mean, I think no less than 100 times a day they ask us, you know, what they can have for snack. I mean, last night we had dinner. Of course, they didn't finish it. And then no less than 10 minutes later, they want a bedtime snack. So to say that my wife and I participate in those policy decisions of theirs is likely an understatement. You know, constantly we're trying to steer them away from the sweets and get them something more sustenance that's going to be better for their overall nutrition. So, all right, with that, what's the third indicator after policymaking decisions?
Material intra-entity transactions. So the investor, let's say, provides all of the administrative support to the investee. They provide all the HR function or business development or finance functions. Or if the investor is like a significant source of customers or a significant purchaser of the investee's production or supplier of raw materials, things like any sort of economic dependence might indicate that the investor is going to have some significant influence over the investee as a result of that broader commercial relationship. And just running with the theme, you know, when I think about it, it's kind of like allowance with my kids. They start the week like flush with cash, and it might be hard to get their attention. But by the time Friday rolls around and they're out of coffee money, you know, they're hanging on my every word and doing all their chores. So it's that kind of economic dependence is what might signal a level of influence that is significant.
And it makes sense, right? Like if the investee is relying on the investor for some important function or resource, then, you know, the investor might have some sway over them, right? In exchange for providing it, just like you do with your kids by providing them their chore money. And you've got older kids, so I imagine this particular indicator is more relevant for you than my young kids. I've tried to get them to do chores for years with, you know, like a $5 a week kind of allowance, and I'm still trying. So they're not quite there yet. All right, so we've got, I think, two more indicators in the guidance. What's the next one?
Shared management personnel. It goes hand in hand with participation in policymaking, like I mentioned before. So you might have a shared C-suite. That's something to look pretty closely at. You know, if that shared management personnel is going to help manage and operate the investee's business. So you have to look pretty carefully just to see if that is conveying some significant influence on the part of the investor.
Yeah, this one, I'm not going to lie, this is the one I probably struggle with the most in terms of working it into this analogy. But the thing I went to was the grandparents. You know, so my parents are, I would say, part of my management team, even as an adult, right? I'm relying on them for advice and guidance. And they are also part of my kids' management team. So we have some level of shared management between myself and my children, although I have observed that the management style is quite different. You know, my kids tend to get a lot more candy and a lot less no's than I do. So I'm not sure how that works into the model. With that, let me, you know, turn to the last one. Last but not least, right? What's the final qualitative indicator that somebody could have significant influence, even if they own less than 20%.
So the final big one is technological dependency. So what's this mean? It means, like, for example, if the investor is the sole source of technology that is significant to the success of the investee, then that might indicate that the investor has significant influence. So if you take, for example, an investee that is developing cutting-edge medical equipment, and the investor has recently developed the technology that's necessary for that equipment, then clearly those critical inputs into the investee's business are going to convey some sort of influence, significant or otherwise, to the investor that would need to be evaluated.
Yeah, it makes sense. You know, it's similar to what we talked about earlier with the intraentity. If I'm providing something of value to my investee, you know, generally that's going to allow me to exert more influence over their operations because I have something they need, and therefore in exchange, you know, I want to get something in return. This one was the easiest one for me, honestly. You know, with my kids, they don't know how to work an iPad or a TV remote, but they love watching shows. So they are entirely dependent on my wife and I for the technological aspect of that in our house. And this, I think more than anything else on the list, gives us the most influence over them, right? Hey, if you want to watch your shows before bed, you got to eat your dinner, you got to do your chores, whatever it is. And it is extremely effective. But you know, Molly, you mentioned this earlier, and I think it was at the top. And it's one thing that I always struggle with when we have accounting guidance that contains these indicators, because it's always hard to figure out, how do I weigh all of this stuff, right? And actually reach a conclusion. I mean, you know, in practice, especially the ones that require the most judgment, you've got some indicators going one way, you've got other indicators going another way. How do I kind of sort this all out when I'm thinking about significant influence?
Nick, I wish there was a black and white answer to this, but like parenting, there isn't. So what we're evaluating here is, like you said, overcoming a presumption. So it is facts and circumstances. It is judgment. And what you're looking at to try to sift through it all is the overall economic, commercial, and governance picture that's coming through that investment. So there's other things that may be relevant. Maybe the investor made a significant loan to the investee. Maybe that loan is convertible into a significant number of shares. Maybe they hold outstanding warrants. There's a lot of other things in the contractual and non-contractual relationship that you just have to look at in a fulsome manner to render a judgment. So I wish I could tell you there's a black and white answer, but the reality is you are making a facts and circumstances determination based upon the individual relationship with this particular investee.
Yeah, you know, I wish there was a black and white answer too, but I kind of knew that that's where we were going to go with this. I mean, at the end of the day, there's no way to get around judgment, right? And unfortunately, this is an area of accounting where sometimes there's significant judgment required. So, you know, maybe the takeaway, you know, to your point is make sure you're considering everything. These indicators that we've talked through are one thing, but as you said, there could be other things at play that also are relevant in terms of this overall assessment of significant influence. And, you know, if you think you're close to the line, it's probably worth, you know, reaching out to your auditor or accounting advisor. And all right, Molly, obviously you're an expert, right? We just established that over the last 20 minutes or so, but I'll be honest, that's not entirely why I asked you to join the podcast today. I asked you to join because I know you have teenagers. And, you know, I've talked about my young children and how that gives me significant influence over them. But I'm thinking once they grow up and they get, you know, friends and phones and cars, my influence is going to evaporate pretty quickly. So I was hoping you could either confirm or deny this theory for me.
As a gating matter, I'll say that everyone's perception of their own parenting expertise diminishes once these kids become teenagers. But for us, you know, when the kids were little, we kind of let them fumble through their day-to-day decisions, you know, kind of like little startups. But we were always in their ear to kind of help them steer the course, like go sit next to the new kid in the dugout, that sort of thing. But the bottom line was we exerted as much influence as we could in the areas that we thought were important. And then when they get older, it just gets different. They have to chart their own course. They have to play their own game, and they have to practice being adults when they're still in the safety of your home. So then all you can do is sit back and hope that at least they were listening a little bit to the things that you said, and it shaped their decision-making and the kind of people that they are. And your influence becomes different. The key decisions they need to make are far fewer, but they are far more impactful to their lives. So It's hard to pull back on how you influence your, or how you exercise your influence over your kids, but it becomes necessary to their self-perception and their overall success.
I appreciate that, and kind of giving me a look into the crystal ball. It's something I try not to think about, to be honest, and I'll just kind of deal with it when it comes. But the reason I'm bringing this up is because, you know, just like what we laid out, is kids grow up, their priorities change, you know, parents' level of influence, you know, changes over time. The same thing can happen, right? In a corporate setting, you know, you have an investment in another corporation, you have significant influence, but things can change that cause you to lose that significant influence. So I was hoping you could maybe just give us a couple examples in that context of what might cause a company to lose significant influence over an equity method investment.
Well, the easy one, of course, is loss of a board seat, or if something happens that changes that director's voting rights at the board level. So that might be one thing. Cancellation of some of these intra-entity contracts that we mentioned before, that might also trigger a reevaluation. Just generally, anything that over time starts to ratchet down the relationship between the investee and the investor, and, you know, kind of indicate that the investee has perhaps taken on additional investors, and so other people are in the boardroom, and you do have to evaluate it over time to make sure that you're appropriately thinking about how your influence impacts your accounting.
And some of this stuff, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, it could happen at the investee level, and it's really no change, you know, at the investor. But let's just say, for example, the investee issues new stock, right? And the investor doesn't participate, and therefore their interest gets diluted. And maybe that causes them to either lose a board seat or drop below 20%. So you really got to monitor not only the investor's rights with respect to the investee, but also the ownership and activities that are happening at the investee level that could cause that influence to change.
That's right. Issuing new stock, or even what happens if the investee enters into a major acquisition, that's going to trigger some sort of kind of recalibration of the capital structure and probably will result in an impact to your interest or voting rights. And so all those types of transactions that you don't control, because you only have significant influence, but nonetheless, you're going to impact your accounting for your investment.
Well, Molly, I think this is, you know, made me appreciate the level of influence I have over my kids right now. And I'm going to try to enjoy that for as long as I can. So thank you for joining me and having some fun with the analogy.
Anytime.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe on whatever app you're listening from. We've got a ton of really great episodes coming up that you are not going to want to miss, including a few on how the upcoming presidential election could impact your financial statements. And while you're there, if you could give us 5 stars, well, we'd really appreciate that too. And if you are interested in learning more about exactly how the equity method works, then check out our equity method handbook, which you can find online, or shoot me an email. It's in the episode description. I would be more than happy to talk to you. And if you're interested in even more accounting topics, then go to our website, frv.kpmg.us. I promise we've got you covered no matter what topic you're looking for. Thanks again, and look forward to seeing you next time.